Most of the world is religious, and millions more are openly superstitious, spiritual, or credulous of the paranormal. But in The Seven Laws of Magical Thinking, Matthew Hudson argues that we all believe in magic, luck, mind over matter, destiny, jinxes, life after death, evil, and heavenly helpers, even when we say we don't. Magical thinking can be quite banal. We find meaning in the world all around us every day. If you own any sentimental object, a wedding ring, a family heirloom, or even an autograph baseball, objects that you'd value more than an identical duplicate, well, that, according to Hudson, is magical thinking. He draws on evolution and cognitive science and neuroscience to show us that we engage in magical thinking all the time. Matthew Hudson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What got you thinking about magical thinking?
Well, I think it probably goes back to when I was a kid and I became an atheist when I was about 10 years old and started wondering why smart people believe strange things. And then I went on to study cognitive neuroscience and try to understand how people think and the sort of quirks of cognition. And then I started digging into the research on the evolution of religion and why we have certain illusions and cognitive biases.
What do you think, let us begin with how you define magical thinking, of what that is.
Well, it's the belief on at least a subconscious level in supernatural phenomena such as luck, destiny, curses, mind over matter, God, jinxes, free will, that sort of thing.
Does it have a relationship to what we say and what we mean? In the sense of, we'll often find ourselves saying, well, I'm going to leave here at 3 o'clock, and with a little luck, I'll get there by 3:30. Now,
yeah, that's sort of a gray area. To some degree, it's just a turn of phrase. You say, you know, things would be best if I got there on time. But it seems that sometimes these references to supernatural concepts actually reveal how we're thinking underneath the hood of the car, so to speak. Sometimes when people feel that something is lucky, they might feel gratitude as if if something good happens, they might think that the universe gave it to them as a gift. So to say that an event is lucky, it's a descriptor to say that it's good, but it's also kind of an explanation.
And that would be magical thinking, then?
Yes, yeah. To feel that the universe cares about the events in your life and is trying to help you out by providing luck for you, or hold you back by providing bad luck.
So when you are sitting in front of a bingo card and there is $1,000 in the pot, and the only thing that stands between you and that $1,000 is B3 coming up, and then all of a sudden, magically, that ping pong ball gets sucked into the vacuum and up comes B3, what is that other than luck?
Well, yeah, so that would seem like it's just pure chance, but the temptation is to see it as an event that was directed specially for you because it has such personal meaning for you. You invest such meaning in the event. And so it's easy to start to think that maybe the meaning is inherent in the event. Maybe it was purposeful. Maybe the universe wanted this to happen for you.
You talk in the book about how magical thinking is a completely irrational way to making our lives make rational sense.
Mm-hmm.
So is that good or bad?
Well, it can be either one. So the belief in destiny, for instance, if something tragic happens to you, it can help you cope. If you see the bad thing as meant to happen, then you might search for a benefit. Maybe it puts you on a new life path. Maybe you learn a lesson from it. And it can be comforting. On the other hand, let's say you're going down one path in life and then you hit a roadblock. If you see that roadblock as a sign that you're supposed to stop and give up, that's fatalism, and that's a negative form of magical thinking. So it can go either way.
How did we come, do you believe, to this magical thinking? Because it seems to be at our very core.
Yeah. One sort of basic cognitive mechanism underlying a lot of magical thinking is pattern finding. People are very good at finding patterns. It's how we learn about the environment. It's how we recognize order and structure our lives. But we're so good at finding patterns that sometimes we see them when they're not really there. We see faces in clouds. We see we hear messages and records played backwards. We see coincidences as more than just random coincidence. And sometimes we explain these illusory patterns by appealing to strange forces, or, you know, luck or karma, that sort of thing, or mind over matter.
And all of it is a way of trying to explain the unknown, right? If you're talking about the afterlife and what happens to us after we die, we don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's comforting to have some sort of explanation. One of the most terrifying things is to not know what's going to happen next in your life, or to not have any control over what's going to happen. And so magical thinking can provide a sense of comfort and safety just knowing what's going to happen, just recognizing some sort of pattern. And it can also provide a sense of direct control. For instance, little superstitious rituals that people do, like crossing fingers or wearing a lucky hat. It may not have any direct influence on the world, but it provides you a sense that you have some sort of control, that you can do something. And actually, that can be good. Even if it's a false sense of control, it can improve self-confidence, which can actually boost performance and provide actual control over a situation.
When you say a false sense of control, I mean, that's interesting, because basically what we're trying to do is to restructure this world around us to match what our perception of that world is.
Yeah, perception is a very, what's called a top-down process. So your expectations and your kind of higher concepts about how the world works filters down to influence how you actually perceive things. So if you expect to see visually things one way, then it will affect the sort of lower level neural visual processing centers, and that happens all throughout the brain.
You talk about superstition, and I find that fascinating, because I think for the average person, if you're walking down the street and you see the ladder and you can avoid walking under it, what the hell, right? like, why tempt fate?
Exactly. So, a lot of it is sort of better safe than sorry, like knocking on wood or avoiding walking under a ladder. The cost of doing this is, you know, just a second of your time, but the benefit could be great, and so it's better to not risk it.
And here again, if you have a bad day, and God forbid it's the day you get the pink slip, and you recall earlier driving to work and having that black cat run in front of the car, you can use that as the excuse.
Exactly. That's another sort of pattern-finding thing. The black cat we associate with bad luck, so then if something later in the day happens that's bad, the pattern pops out. You connect the misfortune with the black cat, and it kind of reinforces your beliefs and reinforces your expectations.
How do we use it best to our advantage, this magical thinking?
Well, I think the two main important, the two biggest benefits of magical thinking are the sense of control and the sense of meaning in life. So if you're in a situation where you feel anxious, you can do something that will make you feel lucky. Like crossing your fingers or any little ritual. For instance, in one experiment, subjects were given a golf ball and told to make 10 golf putts. And subjects who were given a ball that they were told was lucky actually made 35% more successful golf putts.
Mm.
And then for a sense of meaning, if you try to tell a story about your life, if you try to see certain positive things as meant to happen, or even negative things as meant to happen, so that you can find some benefit to those negative things. It can reduce existential anxiety and just help you cope better with the normal ups and downs of life.
And it can create challenges as well, can it?
Yeah, you have to be on the lookout for ways that magical thinking can get in the way. If you have a lot too many rituals, for instance, you might spend all day touching doorknobs, or you might become fatalistic or think that the universe is working against you, or you know, that sort of thing. So you always have to be a little bit self-critical of these illusory beliefs.
And when it gets down to it, we never really know, do we?
That's the thing, we don't. I mean, in the book, I don't really try to disprove God, for instance, because it's a mystery. You can't disprove something like that. So really, all you can really study is how people think about these things.
It's a fascinating study of how people think about these things. The name of the book is The Seven Laws of Magical Thinking. Matthew Hudson is the author. It is published by Hudson Street Press. Matthew, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your insights.
Well, thanks again for having me, Joe.
I appreciate it. The Seven Laws of Magical Thinking is published by Hudson Street Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.